welcome to the Domestic Fuel Cast, a podcast devoted to news and information about alternative fuels and energy, produced and hosted by Zimcom New Media.
Debating the need for a waiver of the RFS, I'm John Davis. With the formal request by several governors for a waiver of the renewable fuel standard due to the drought, interest on both sides of the debate have been expressing their views, something that will become even more prevalent as the EPA has now formally entered into the 30-day comment period over the RFS waiver. In fact, right as the government entered into the comment period, the National Corn Growers Association asked for another 30 days of comments, citing harvest and the uncertainty of this year's corn crop. One of those making the case for the waiver is National Turkey Federation President Joel Brandenberger.
The renewable fuel standard has been distorting the corn market since the day it was first created in 2005. You've seen much greater volatility and price swings in the corn market since the RFS was created. Corn is the number one feed ingredient for turkeys and for most food-producing animals. And when you have a situation like this year where you have the worst drought in generations, crippling much of the corn belt, you know you're going to have a corn harvest that will not meet all the needs of the various consumers of corn. You have to have the government back off of its mandate that a set amount of corn be blended into ethanol.
And he points out that lawmakers created the waiver just for disastrous droughts.
The authors of the renewable fuel standard, those who created it in Congress, said at the time, we have a waiver here in case a natural disaster or some other unforeseen economic condition would necessitate waiving the renewable fuel standard. If this isn't such a situation, then you have to conclude that the waiver process is currently written is worthless.
But people at the Renewable Fuels Association have a different viewpoint. They cite two university studies as proof of waiving any of the RFS would not significantly lower corn prices. An Iowa State University study and a separate one from Purdue that estimates the drop in corn prices at only about 5.5% to 7.5%. During a Farm Foundation webinar, Purdue's Wally Tyner said there are many other factors outside of corn prices that would affect how much impact a waiver would have.
The determinants of the impact of a waiver depend on these technical and financial incentives. If refiners and blenders cannot change for technical reasons what they're doing now, if the system of using ethanol the way we use it in the entire fuel distribution system is so entrenched that you can't change it quickly or would choose not to change it quickly, then a waiver has very little impact. The economic harm has been done by the drought. The corn price is substantially higher. The losses amount to tens of billions of dollars. And in thinking about a waiver, EPA can't change that. They can't change the loss. They can only redistribute it among the affected parties. So if refining and blending flexibility exists, a waiver helps livestock producers and consumers, basically sharing the available corn supplies. But a waiver that reduces ethanol production also penalizes corn producers and ethanol producers, and the ethanol producers invested in those plants, assuming that the renewable fuel standard would provide a market or guarantee of a market for their product.
His colleague at Purdue, Chris Hurt, also warned of a wild swing to record low corn prices next year.
That is something economists call demand destruction. It is the concern that some of our end users in the United States as well as around the country, the higher corn prices go, the more we force some of those sectors to cut back. Now, demand destruction in the long run has some consequences if we return to normal production in, let's say, the whole world for the next 12 months. Then we have fairly large supplies. We have the possibility that we'll be looking at a 15 billion bushel corn crop at this time a year from now with a utilization base at 11 billion bushels, having cut it back so severely. So I think one of the unintended consequences is that we could see a lot of instability, a huge volatility dropping from the highest price ever seen for a U.S. average price for the 12 crop, and the decrease could be the largest we ever have seen for the 13 crop.
Meanwhile, former Secretary of Agriculture Clayton Yetter, who served as Ag Secretary under President George H.W. Bush from 1989 to 1991, says he believes the markets will resolve the current situation.
Markets work. And the fact is, the rationalization has already begun, and you know, we're seeing adjustments taking place in ethanol. We're seeing adjustments in the livestock and poultry industries. We're going to see adjustments in the price levels of grains as we move forward. There's going to be a rationing process and a rationalization process that's already underway and will continue. Anytime you get government further involved to try to deal with issues like this, government usually mucks it up. And so I'd rather let the private sector do it through the market process than to get a few more bureaucrats into action, most of whom will have no agricultural experience whatsoever, if any, and the chances that they might muck it up are pretty darn great.
Current Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is telling leaders at the American Coalition for Ethanol that ethanol is an industry worth supporting, and the RFS has his and the president's support. Growth Energy CEO Tom Bias says the folks making the argument that too much corn is being used for ethanol are distorting the numbers.
A lot of folks out there are using misinformation. The one that really is egregious is this, that we use 40% of the corn crop. That's a gross number. That's like gross income versus net income. We only use about 16% of the nation's corn acreage once you account for the displacement of corn acres, because the distiller's grains is a high value, high protein. All the oil, all the fiber and protein out of that kernel of corn goes back in to livestock feed, but it also displaces soybean meal. And when you add that up, it's 16% of the corn crop. And for those people saying, well, the only thing we can do is just stop the demand for ethanol when there's thousands of uses for corn, it's like they're putting a domestic grain embargo on one use that's really been the driver of this farm economy. And why we would want to risk that for a temporary situation is beyond me. The market will regulate itself. It has in the past. It is currently. Ethanol production's down about 15% from last year. Other uses will moderate as well. And then prices will come down. We'll have another big crop next year, probably an all-time record, because high prices is usually the cure for high prices. Farmers are great at producing. In fact, they overproduce most of the time. And that's why you still, after we get through this rough spot, need that demand from ethanol as well as all the other uses so we can keep this rural economy humming.
Bias adds that a waiver of the RFS could have the biggest impact on some of the advanced biofuels.
Anyone who's thinking about investing the hundreds of millions of dollars in a commercial refinery to produce it from a cellulosic feedstock is going to stop and think, well, you know, we can't count on the government programs into the future if they're going to change their mind every time you have a little bobble. This is a mother act of Mother Nature. Ethanol didn't make it stop raining. Ethanol didn't cause the pastures to dry up, although, you know, some people would like to blame us for it.
Meanwhile, ethanol industry leaders are also quick to point out that even with the drought, it will still be the eighth largest corn crop in U.S. history, and worldwide, corn production will still be the second biggest crop ever. If the EPA doesn't grant the National Corn Growers Association's request for more comment time, the agency will then have 60 days from the end of September to render a final decision, one that many folks on both sides of the issue will be anxious to see. I'm John Davis reporting.
You've been listening to the Domestic Fuel Cast, the official podcast of DomesticFuel.com. Check out the website daily for the latest good news about the alternative energy industry.